Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, it's the Copyright Forum. And to answer your questions, our usual great panel is here. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and writes a column for Metroland. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. Nice to have you all here once again.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
Hello.
Pre-bad weather. Give us a call now, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the phone number. Now, you can also post comments on our show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment on today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet us at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag Vox Pop. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, the number here is 1-800-348-2551. And panel, to start the show here, I thought we would discuss a couple things I found in the news. This one from yesterday, from NBCConnecticut.com. Mother Teresa painting removed from Trumbull Library is the headline. Trumbull officials have temporarily removed artwork displayed at the public library over concerns that the use of Mother Teresa's image in the painting infringes on copyright. Independent organizations have complained that the inclusion of Mother Teresa's image in the painting is potential copyright infringement, according to Trumbull First Selectman Tim Herbst. Well, what do we make of this, panel?
I read this, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I think because they said somebody speculates that the controversy may have more to do with Catholic leaders' recent objection to Mother Teresa being depicted a long time a woman holding a Planned Parenthood sign. I think it has more to do with that than anything resembling copyright.
But is there, in fact, a copyright issue, a pretext in which someone could use for this?
No.
I don't see how.
Yeah, I mean, even though the guy got the wording wrong, it's not a doctrine of fair use. There is a doctrine of fair use. And this sounds like it would be allowed under editorial comment.
But well, it also sounds like they're objecting to the use of Mother Teresa's image, and you don't own a no one owns a copyright in your own image.
Exactly. That's what I was going to point out.
Well, I was thinking, would this be a problem if somebody painted Mother Teresa from a photograph?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yes.
Okay, so it's unclear from the story, but there may be a copyright issue, but it's not. In other words, I could paint a picture of John F. Kennedy if I want to.
Yeah.
It's not going to be very good.
But the copyright resides in the individual who creates the image.
Right.
I don't see how.
Yeah, the painter might be on the hook.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I see, if that's the case, if it was a photograph and somebody slavishly copied the photograph of Mother Teresa's face and put it on there with all the rest of this stuff.
Okay.
It would be a thin copyright claim to begin with, and it would go, you know, the photographer would have to go against the painter.
Right.
And
right. But the library is not indemnified against this because they didn't have the painter sign a form saying that, you know, he bears responsibility.
And that's what
for
this
any,
is all about, right?
Any, but that's a contractual problem, not a copyright problem.
Right.
Yeah. And, okay. And you know, they won't go after the library, and if they do, they won't get anything.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is just...
Yeah.
Okay,
of,
so the first story I picked was, meh, not so great. All right, fine. It's the Copyright Forum.
But interesting.
Paul, thank you. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law here. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. All right, this one perhaps more interesting, at least more humorous. I find it humorous. This is from Consumerist, which I believe is a nonprofit wing of Consumer Reports. Dentist who claimed copyright over patient's Yelp review must pay $4,766 in damages. And I quote, way back in 2011, we told you about a dental patient who said his dentist had gone too far with a privacy agreement that preempted patients from publicly complaining about the doctor and claiming copyright on patients' reviews. After nearly 4 years of legal wrangling, the dentist has finally been ordered to pay the patient nearly $5,000 in damages. So, Paul Rapp or Bill or Polly, explain to me what the dentist was trying to claim here.
That he had his patients sign a form signing over copyright to whatever they may say about him on Yelp or any other review site. And
it sounds like an ingenious little plan.
Well, but it's not legal either.
Small thing.
Yeah, yeah. There was a bed and breakfast in Hudson that got, you know, I mean, what happens is you do this and then somebody complains and then it ends up on social media and you end up looking like, well, the bully that you are, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Well, the last line of this says, in the end, the court awarded the patient the money, but he's unlikely ever to see that money as the dentist apparently vanished into the ether in 2013. But
ether being the.
Yeah, nice.
The operative
nice,
word.
Yeah, nice play on words there.
But why is it specifically illegal if I'm providing a service and I say, I own the copyright to any comments that you make about my service using the name of my company? Why is that illegal specifically?
Well, I don't think you can just demand and acquire copyrights that way. That's no different than publishers who try to demand, coerce you into giving up your copyright just to create a piece of artwork.
But it's
yeah,
quite
but
different,
in this
though.
In this case, the patient who is being told he's signing over his rights is paying the dentist. It's not
that's
like the
true.
Dentist
that's
voluntarily paying the dentist. He doesn't have to go to that dentist.
Well, that's true.
It's interesting. The judge said that the using copyright claims in this manner constitutes breaches of fiduciary duty and violations of dental ethics, and as such were copyright abuse, which leaves open the possibility if you didn't have, you know, dental ethics is something I've never heard before. But if you weren't, you know, if you weren't a medical doctor and subject to these, you might be able to get away with it.
But there's a line here in this article, and again, this is from Consumerist. It says, in an attempt to get the write-ups taken down, the dentist claimed copyright ownership of the content under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Now, the patient said that these are fair use. But what aspect of the Millennium Copyright Act, Paul, would this dentist have used to defend this?
I have no idea.
You're the lawyer.
This is two lawyers making things up out of whole cloth, yeah. Going at it.
Under that's straight right. up copyright law, he might have a claim if the person signed a piece of paper saying, I'm assigning you
right.
everything I write about you in the future. But again, what the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was the attempt to deal with digital and internet stuff in the late 90s.
But this is internet. Yelp is internet.
Yeah, but so he's claiming ownership of the Yelp page? I don't.
Of the comments.
And I still don't see how they. You
know. I don't either.
You have to, in order to transfer copyright, you have to assign copyright and say I'm assigning, you know. It has to be in writing. You know,
right.
You have to sign it, they have to sign it, and you have to state, I'm assigning copyright, my copyright, but can you assign copyright to something you haven't done yet?
Yeah.
I've seen, yeah.
Isn't that prior restraint?
No. I mean, you know, that's what a record contract is. I mean, it's you know, I'm going to record this album and you're going to own it.
But in this case, it comes up against free speech rights, doesn't it?
Boy, Ray, you just come up with the most interesting.
Hey, listen, you know, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I found it fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
This
yeah.
dentist, this mystical dentist who has now vanished
into the ether.
Yeah, so he'll never pay that $4,700. All right, the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Paul Rapp is here. Bill Westwood is here. Alan Chartok, not here. I am filling in for Alan today. Polly Law is also here. You're just back from the Grand Canyon, yeah?
Yes, I am.
How was that?
It was pretty fabulous. I was artist in residence at the Grand Canyon for 3 weeks in November, and it was fraught with peril in some ways and
an
utter and complete joy. I did get cornered by those three vicious chihuahuas in the gas station.
I mean, that's
on
happened
the way
to all
there.
Of us.
And no, I got to the park, and the project that I had proposed doing was tossed out.
Ooh, but
yes.
They let you stay.
They let me stay.
And the views were spectacular.
Views were utterly unbelievable.
That's terrific. All right, let's go to the phones, 1-800-348-2551. Han in Albany, you're on.
Hello, thank you for having me on your show.
Sure.
I'm an artist. I make statues, paintings. I have my own website. And I often share those images with individuals on social media.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, what do I need to do to protect myself from copyright infringement or some sort of illegal use of my images?
Well, you need to register them, for one thing, with the Copyright Office. Number two, if you get in your on your wall something, some bogus notice about preventing Facebook from owning your copyright under the Statute of Rome and, you know, all this other kind of BS. Don't read that. Okay. Toss it out. I always put a watermark on any images I put on Facebook of my work.
Okay.
I mean, actually, you know, you own the copyrights to begin with, but the best protection you can get is registering those copyrights with the Copyright Office, which you can do at the website of copyright.gov. And
that's the best solution.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're going to be posting stuff on the internet and, you know, sort of letting it loose around the world, it's a good idea to do that.
Okay.
Okay. And I just asked because I do a lot of, like I said, sculptural work, but in this 2D world where everything's on the internet, I photograph it, and I don't mind the photographs being circulated. It's my free advertisement, but I do have worries about someone replicating a piece of artwork or making something similar to that three-dimensional artwork.
Registration is your best bet, and just monitor the use carefully.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It is the Copyright Forum. Paul Rapp is here, Polly Law and Bill Westwood. Yours truly, Ray Graff, in for Alan. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting The Artist Revealed, Artist Portraits and Self-Portraits, with works by Milton Avery, Chuck Close, Leonard Baskin, Edward Steichen, Norman Rockwell, and more. ArkellMuseum.org. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Sheehy Opticians.com. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.Kendall.org. And Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com.
Copyright Forum. Anybody here on the panel want to name that tune?
I don't have a clue.
Sunny Moon for Two, Sonny Rollins.
Oh, good for you.
The greatest tenor man of all time. Back to the phones we go. Bill and Saugerties. Bill, you're on.
Hi. My question is about music copyright. Back in 1979, 1980, in that time frame, I was a staff writer for a music publishing company. We submitted a number of songs to them, and they accepted the songs. We had a couple that were copywritten and actually published on record. But the rest of our songs never really did anything with them. And time passed, and I got on with other things. And recently, in the past few years, I've been writing again. And so I tracked down the publishing company. They had closed shop, and I found the original owners, and I asked them if I could have my rights back to the songs that I submitted. And they said no problem. I sent them a letter, registered mail, they basically said that they were turning over all the rights to me, back to me. They both signed it. They sent it back to me. There's the other thing I was thinking about is also, isn't there a 35-year limit as far as if you have a song that's with, let's say, a publishing company where nothing's been done with it for a certain number of years, it reverts back to you anyway?
Well, were you an employee of the publishing company, or were you sort of a freelancer?
I was freelance. Okay. I mean, they paid me, but it was on a 1099.
Okay, and so you had a contract that said, that you're transferring the works back to them, and so yes, after 35 years, and this is after 1978.
Yeah, it was 1979, 1980, in that time frame.
Yeah, so after 35 years, you would be able to petition the Copyright Office to get those rights back. And a lot of artists, a lot of well-known artists are doing that right now as we speak, and, you know, renegotiating their lousy recording contracts and all of that. But I think what you did by having them sign the rights back over to you is much cheaper and much easier. You know, and that's the quickest way between A and B. Having to do this whole petition thing with the Copyright Office, I think, would be time-consuming and expensive.
But if you sign a work-for-hire agreement, you can't get your rights back. Is that not correct?
Right, but songwriting wouldn't be in one of the work. You know, in one of those nine.
But in this particular case, if I was a writer for hire, and I asked them for the rights back, and I sent that to them, and they sent me the thing back returning my rights, is that
you're golden?
Yeah. I think you have to send it into the Copyright Office to get the rights reassigned.
Yeah, actually, I mean, you can just register the works with the Copyright Office and say that you're the writer. And just hold on to the piece of paper, I think, in case anybody challenges it.
Yep.
I doubt they will.
Yep.
Yeah, the only two songs that were actually copywritten by them, which were originally copywritten by myself, were two songs that were published, one in the UK and one in the US. And I was wondering about those. How that wouldn't apply, would it? Or is how would you go about trying to get your rights back on those songs?
I think you can simply register the assignment with the Copyright Office. Just, you know, have them and I'm not sure what form there is, but I believe there is one where you can just say, this has been assigned to me by a transfer in writing, and then you will be the copyright owner of record.
Perhaps you should just contact the Copyright Office and ask them directly. They're pretty good about helping you with those things.
Yeah.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. It is the Copyright Forum on WAMC Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551, the number. John in Albany. John, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
The Internet being a wealth of stuff, good, bad, and indifferent, I'll sometimes find an article that I think is useful, and I may want to share it with my staff at, say, a staff meeting. Say, you know, things you should never do in an email, something like that. If I do a screenshot or download it and print it out and hand it around at my staff meetings, am I doing anything wrong?
This is technically maybe you're infringing somebody's copyrights, but don't worry about
but
it.
But I mean, if you could,
if that's as far as it goes,
I'm not profiting by it. It seems to me that they put it out there because they wanted somebody to find it useful and do something with it.
It would be cleaner if you gave people the URL and let them look it up themselves.
Yeah, but...
But like Paul said, and like Bill is trying to say...
no one will come after you.
What I usually try and do is make sure that I copy at least enough so that people can see who the author was and know who did it and know what site it was published on. So I don't claim ownership of it myself. I try and give credit to whoever wrote it.
Well, let me ask you this. How many copies are you making and sending out?
15 or 20 to my immediate staff.
Yeah, if you said 3,000, I would say go get a license.
The other thing is most people who post things on the Internet, if you look at their sites, a lot of them will tell you, you're free to use this to distribute this, but just give me credit. So I think if you just put a little credit line at the bottom of your distribution, you'd be fine. I don't think you've got a problem.
Thanks, John, for the call. What's the difference if he had a laptop and just showed the monitor to everybody? What's the difference?
It goes back. There was a case years ago, back before the Internet, where I think it was Texaco put together a big packet of stuff that they had, you know, come into their office and they had copied like 2,000 copies because they sent identical packets out to all of their employees at this one level. And the various authors of the various pieces said, wait a minute, you know, this is egregious. You owe us money for this.
Yeah, they basically republished their stuff in a book.
Yeah, in a book.
I mean, look, here's the bottom line. Copyright grants to the copyright holder an exclusive right to copy and to distribute that work. If you know, we are talking about some of the gray areas here, but, you know, if you exceed some of those gray areas, you're going to get into legal
right.
trouble.
And I understand sending out 3,000 books is different, but then is this gray area where if I'm looking at something on the web, not put there by me, but by somebody else, say, what Hillary Clinton's what not mm-hmm. to do in an email, and if somebody looks over my shoulder, then am I violating copyright?
No.
All right. So what's the difference?
Because it hasn't been copied.
It hasn't been printed out and copied.
Yeah, and it's funny because you're right. There is no distinction. I mean, there was I think the Pew or some think tank said, you know, there is no difference with music between streaming and downloading.
Yeah.
Because you just listen to it.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference? But the law, at least now, you know, sees a difference that you're actually putting something on your computer.
It's a distinction without a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, let's go to Rachel and Rhinebeck. Rachel, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a book I published some years ago and had a lot of illustrations, and we got permission for those. Now I want to do a new edition. Does that permission carry over?
A new edition.
It depends on what the permission said, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. What did you get permission for? Did you use
illustrations from people's pictures.
Art that you did not do.
No, art that I did not do. I got permission from the artist, from the publisher of his art.
But did the permission say?
You know, I don't remember because right now what I have is the book, and it just says, you know, who gave the permission for what pictures.
Well, but it's basically the same book, right? Just a new edition?
But
it's
I don't know.
It's just a reprinting.
Changes, yeah.
I don't know, but in my contracts, I will grant a limited use for my artwork for the current edition of a book.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
It's stipulated in there if you want to create another edition, you have to come back to me for an additional license,
okay.
Which is why I ask you what were the details of the grant of permission by the creators in the original letter, if you don't have that.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't have it.
Yeah, I mean, that situation you're talking about, Bill, I think is more particular for the medical illustrator, and for good reason, you know, because they books get reconstituted.
Right.
And but something like, what kind of book was this that you?
Well, it's a book about interpretation of tarot cards. And so we use a lot of illustrations of different tarot decks.
Okay.
And we got permission from each of them, but I don't have the letters. Would the permissions in the listed in the book be saying that? Probably not. They just said permission was granted by so-and-so.
Yeah. I think unless they said for this edition only, if it's the same book, I would feel pretty confident going ahead.
Yeah, you could go ahead and then just say, gee, I'm really sorry. I thought I had permission.
That happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yes. Better to ask forgiveness
than
ask
to me
permission.
All the time.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Rachel, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop today. Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood are here. You can tweet us your questions and comments at WAMC Radio. Just put the hashtag VoxPop on there. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Getting back to an earlier call from the guy who wrote music. And he wrote it for, I guess he was an employee, or at least a contract employee of a company.
Yeah,
so I got thinking about Carole King and the Brill Building. And so what about all those classics that they wrote back in the day? Yet she is obviously profiting greatly from that.
It depends on your contract.
Right.
I'm guessing their contracts in the Brill Building weren't that good.
Right.
Yeah. So easy to break.
Yeah. And so I think she's probably getting something. You know, she's getting the songwriter half, certainly not the publishing half, or some of the songwriting
half.
And
the publishing is where the money is made?
Yeah, but the breakdown of the royalties.
Yeah, I mean, you know, generally with songwriting, you know, as a general matter, half of the money goes to the writer and the other half goes to the publishing company. But those guys may have actually been employees. I don't know.
That's what I was wondering.
I don't know what their deal is. And there's, you know, there's Ellie Greenwich and there's Al Cooper and there's all these, you know,
right.
all these songwriters who pumped out, you know, basically the American soundtrack from 60 to 65. and I don't know what their deal was. I don't think it was very
rich for them. Were they employees or were they renters?
I think they were employees. I mean, they showed up and they had offices, and you know that's what the Brill Building did. But I'm going to find a book about the Brill.
All right, and next, that's
and
your
next
homework.
Time I'll report back.
All right, let's go to Mary in Beacon. Mary, you're on.
Hi, I have a quick question about how do I go about establishing pseudonyms to use for different publications, since I want to work in different genres, but I want to get paid, but I don't want to use my real name. Is this something that's done between the publisher and myself, or how does that work? Like if I send in an article, do I use my real name, even though I want it published under another name?
No, I think you send it in under your assumed name. But then you have to probably set up a DBA account so
right.
you can cash the check.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the copyright the Copyright Office allows pseudonymous.
Pseudonymous. Oh, very nice.
How's that?
Yeah. Close enough.
Yeah. Registration of works.
So if Ringo Starr wrote a song,
yes,
he could still cash it as Richard Starkey.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
And vice versa.
And DBAs. And if I can do more than five, is there a limit to how many I can do?
No.
I don't think so.
No. Oh, great. Thank
and,
you so
and
much.
And if you go on the copyright website, you'll see if you look at a registration form where you have the opportunity to put in a pseudonym.
Great. Great.
Okay.
Would you give that website again when I finish?
www.copyright.gov.
Good. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Greg in Albany. Greg, you're on.
Hi, I do a little bit of political consulting and speech writing in town.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if the work that I do, if I maintain certain copyright to that work. And, I mean, traditionally, speech writers sort of are happy to see behind the scenes and offering their ideas. But does copyright apply in this case?
Yep.
Yes. I think the thing to the catch is the willingness...
The contract you signed.
Or not being willing of the person that you're contracting with. As Polly said, if you can get someone to allow you to retain these rights, and absolutely, it's fine.
But then the next time you use the same quotes from the speech, the next guy is going to be accused of plagiarizing the first guy, you know, and so you're limited there. I mean, I think it's the custom, you know, in speech writing that the person making the speech owns everything. However, that's counter to
well, that person's paying him, right?
If you don't have a written contract to that fact, then you retain your copyright.
But. Okay, but back in the day, many decades ago, I wrote commercials in radio,
yeah.
and hundreds of them, and I would not own any of those. I worked for a company.
You were an employee.
That was work for hire.
Right, absolutely. But isn't that what Greg does?
Not necessarily. He may be freelance.
Then again, you know, the person making the speech may be making contributions so that they're joint authors.
Yes.
Ooh.
If he changes the wording.
Yep. Which somebody probably will do.
Yeah.
Then you've got a classic joint author where both, you know, both the speechwriter and the person giving the speech who contributes own half of it.
Yeah. So there are a lot of variables here.
That's a tricky one. Yeah.
Yeah. Greg, great call. Thanks a lot. Let's go over to Dominic in Scotia. Dominic, you're on.
Hi. How are you? You guys have a great show.
Thanks.
My question is this. I'm a cigar aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm sure you guys know, we have a very odd situation with Cuba. When I go to Europe, virtually all the cigars that I buy are from Cuba, and they're perfectly legal there as they are everywhere else except in the United States. Now, many of these people who fled Cuba or whatever have taken on Cuban cigar brand names like Romeo Julieta, etc. They sell them they're made mostly in Latin America, and they're sold in the United States, but in the United States, we don't sell the original Cuban versions. What's going to happen when the walls finally come down? Who's going to decide? I mean, those Latin American versions that have stolen those Cuban names are not sold, as far as I know, in Europe. and we can't buy the Cuban versions here. Who's going to win out?
The Patent and Trademark Office.
Yeah, I don't know
their
attorneys.
I don't know
lawyers. Lawyers.
I think they're all owned by the same company. Like Davidoff might own all of these brands. Some are made in Cuba, but then they're also made in the Dominican. And so I think it's the same international companies that own these. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
But
the Dominicans are just as good, by the way, as the Cubans.
Well, I'm not saying one's better than the other. I'm just saying, what are you going to have when you have two Romeo Julietas, two whatever? I mean, which are you going to have? You're going to have the made in Cuba version? You're going to have dual names?
Probably there'll be a certification for really made in Cuba and then not really made in Cuba, and you could have that under the same brand name, and I think that's probably what would...
And aren't they technically violating copyright law right now by taking names?
No,
not
copyright.
Again,
trademark.
That would be trademark.
But I think that trademark. They're all owned... I think they're actually owned by the same company.
Ah, so...
In other words, if you read Cigar Aficionado, you'll find that Davidoff has... You know, plantations in Cuba, but also in the Dominican and others. Anyway, we got to take a break, but great question. Thanks for getting me thinking about cigars now. And earlier, Paul Rapp was talking about bourbon, and let's just call the whole thing off.
Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, InterimHealthcare.com. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional services and supplies to owners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. And the Capital District YMCA, working to help those in need across the Capital Region with scholarships for childcare, for membership, and more. CDYMCA.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We're playing Name That Tune. That's Henry Mancini, Dreamsville, from the Peter Gunn soundtrack.
Oh,
you see? Good stuff. 1-800-348-2551. Before we get on with some email questions and then back to the phones, let's rattle off our contact info, starting with Polly.
PMLaw@buttonwoodart.com.
I am I'm Paul@paulrapp.com.
Two P's.
Two P's.
And I am Westwood. Westwoodmedical.com.
You sure?
No, it's Westwoodmedical.com. You want a lifeline? You screwed me up there. Come on.
Do it again. One more
Westwoodmedical.com.
All right, fair enough. All right, this is from email. This is Tom in Woodstock. I'm told that in order to act on infringement effectively, you have to be registered with the Copyright Office. What if the date of creation is years before date of actual registration? How solid is an infringement case against someone who infringed between time of creation and time of registration? That's from Tom in Woodstock.
It's fine. You know, as you own the copyright upon the work's creation, you can't go to court until you register, but that doesn't mean that it's open season on your work in between those two times. So
yeah. The real catch is that you can't go after, it's not a statutory infringement if the work wasn't registered prior to infringement.
Okay.
Therefore, you're limited to reasonable, quote-unquote, licensing amounts.
Okay, so depending on how good your lawyer is,
that's
changes?
Pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah. Paul is very good.
All right, so, nice. All right, here's another one. This is from Mark. If you're just an average Joe who has never written anything before and you'd like to write a book or a short story, how can you protect your creative work so that your work is not stolen? And how much does it cost to obtain the necessary copyrights? We've been over this before.
Copyright.gov, 35 buckaroos.
All right, this one's from Beatrice. I was asked to co-write a TV pilot with a friend. I worked on completing a detailed...
55? Oh.
Excuse me?
I've just been corrected.
I think it
discussion
just went up
groups
to,
are breaking out during the show. This is
just,
not a good sign.
I think it just went up to 55 from 35.
Still,
but one single unpublished work is still 35.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry.
Are we all set?
Yeah.
All right. So this is from Beatrice. I was asked to co-write a TV pilot with a friend. I worked on completing a detailed treatment that took 1 year of my time to complete. I have many emails stating that I am the co-writer for the project. Recently, my friend stopped keeping me abreast of developments on the project and answering my emails. Can I copyright this work on my own, or must I have my friend's permission? Thanks, Beatrice.
You could register it, but you need to register it with your former friend's information as co-registrant, right? Co-creator.
Yes, but I don't know if you need the co-creator's signature.
You don't
need
her permission.
No.
I tell you what I would do. I would contact an attorney, have the attorney write her a letter, and...
Oh, that's it for the friendship, then.
And tell... Well, it sounds like it's gone down the tubes already.
I hope that they can reach a rapprochement.
Well, I would attempt that first, then, and then I would contact the attorney, and I would have the attorney write her a letter and say, I'm registering this.
Okay.
And, you know, you need to pay attention to this because it's valuable.
I would register it first and then send her
okay.
a letter saying
okay.
it's a done deed.
Okay.
Okay. And unfriend her on Facebook, by the way. And this one's from Glenn. Can you copyright a design for furniture or clothes?
Yeah, try.
It's difficult.
The
policy of the Copyright Office is that those things are
useful.
Purely useful.
Okay.
And so you'll have a very difficult time. You might be able to get a design patent, but it probably wouldn't be worth your time and money.
Yeah, and okay. clothing.
No.
Yeah. Not clothing.
So how do designers make all that money then?
They get there first with the design, and then
and they get ripped off.
Okay.
Almost immediately.
But they also slather their logos all over everything, and so
they
so
get
that,
trademark protection.
So that would be trademark protection.
Yeah.
Right.
For the works, so they do it that way, and that, you know, that's why you see logos all over everything.
Bonus points, Paul, for using the word slather. Let's go to Jack in Albany. Jack, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question about a photographer. A girlfriend of mine was out at a talent show last fall, and a photographer was there and asked her to pose for some pictures, which she gladly did. But then she posted them on her website. And he contacted her and said to take his pictures down, that she had no right doing that, that she was infringing on him if she didn't pay him for the photos.
Mm-hmm.
She never asked for her photo taken. So, you know, she was just kind of putting them on her Facebook and whatever, showing her friends her pictures, and he demanded that she take them down.
Well, they weren't her pictures.
Well, except okay. also the
pictures of her. But...
Did she sign a release for the photographer?
No, I don't think so. He didn't ask anything.
Well, if the photographer didn't get a release, he's actually...
There's not a whole lot he can do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And he's not going to come at... I mean, this sounds awful
Shake
scammy.
Mm. Yeah.
You know? That's
yeah.
what I told her. I said, I would leave him up there. What is he going to do, you know?
Well, if you get a cease and desist from an attorney, then call Paul. Not Saul, but Paul. And...
Unless the cease and desist is from me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I, you know.
Okay.
All right, Jack, thanks.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
So, and the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Here's where I'm unclear about that last one. If a person is not famous, they need to have, the photographer needs a release. But if I'm famous, the photographer can snap paparazzi away, yeah?
As long as they're on public space.
Well, yeah, and actually anybody, if they're on public space, you can
yeah.
take their photograph. You just can't use it in advertising.
Okay, so in other words, the subject of that photo then would have the right to do whatever that person wants with it?
Not necessarily, no.
They can't use it in a way that harms the reputation of the person in the photograph.
No, but the person in the photo can't do anything they want with
no.
the photograph.
No,
no, I don't think, for example, she could go out and publish it.
Well, isn't putting it on Facebook essentially publishing it?
As a book of, this is where copyright is not caught up yet.
Okay.
I think the new copyright law that they're talking about somewhere down the road may address some of these issues.
Mm.
But I think because he doesn't have a release, he doesn't really have a strong legal leg to stand on. You're supposed to get a release even from a professional model.
Okay.
If you're a photographer shooting them in order to be able to use their image.
But now, what if it was in a park, a public area? Then I don't need to get a release if I take a picture of Bill.
If it's just incident.
If
you're
not
going, being in the photo is incidental.
As long as you don't turn it into a coffee commercial,
yeah,
you're fine.
What coffee do you drink, by the way?
I don't.
Okay.
But the thing is, posting it on social media, you know, Pinterest and Instagram and all that has become okay, really. You know, people share.
Has it been litigated as okay, or is it just okay because no one's done anything about it?
Common law.
General, you know, general, you know, consensus of use, mm-hmm. really.
I'm not an attorney, but I don't think any copyright attorney would want to jump into that swamp.
Okay.
No.
Let's go to Dee in New Windsor. Dee, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I have some photos on my hard drive in my computer and on my Facebook, and they're rather unique. They are inside a car wash, and I use a Mac computer. So I wasn't aware that Microsoft, in its latest version, its screensaver, lo and behold, is just about the same as one of my pictures that I have. They could have just taken a portion of it out and used it. I can't prove it, you know, but it sure looks just like my work. And it's, you know, in my photos and Facebook, and it's also in my iPhoto on my computer.
Where did you publish it?
It was on Facebook.
On Facebook.
And my photo section.
There's no way unless you published it at like 1600 DPI that they could turn a photo posted on Facebook into a screensaver.
Okay.
What about the concept of a photo? In other words, could they recreate it, and would there be a possible infringement there?
Ray, you and I could stand together side by side at the Grand Canyon and focus on the same object with our cameras, and both of our photographs, even though they may appear identical to the outside viewer, would each be individually registrable.
Well, what about an iconic photograph, let's say the Beatles walking on Abbey Road on the crosswalk? Clearly, I could take a picture, the same picture, but I'm still infringing on that idea.
No, you can't infringe on an idea because an idea is not copyrightable.
Okay. Well, Dee, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Chris in Claremont. Chris, you're on.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good.
This is my question. I have my late wife published magazine articles in the era, like between 1980 and 1985. She had sent them to the copyright office at that time. I haven't been able to exhume the record of that. But if it was in a magazine, which presumably had its own contract, which I don't have either, or copyright structure, am I able to collect those articles and publish them as in book form, or do I have to? What do I need to do to be able to do that?
I think you probably can. Freelancers, you know, under the law, if you're a freelancer and there's no contract, the publisher gets the right to publish it once, and then all rights revert back to the author. Now, if there was a contract that said otherwise, then you would have to go by the terms of those of that.
You'd have
that
to contact
contract.
The magazine publisher
and find out. Yeah,
work out
one,
something.
One thing you might do is if you can go to the library and find copies of those magazines, or if you have copies, look and see if there's a copyright notice in the name of your wife on the with the article.
Well, you said that your wife did register them.
Yes. Well, so, I mean, she sent them to Washington.
Yeah, she registered them.
So I think that would probably mean that
that
you own the rights.
You own the rights?
Sure sounds like it to me.
Go forth and do the book.
The magazines are no longer published, so, I mean, who
knows? That's irrelevant at this point.
Yeah.
That's irrelevant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
Go for it.
Is it also irrelevant if you were to publish a photograph and you have copyrighted it? Do you have to put that little C?
It doesn't hurt.
But
you don't have to.
You don't have to. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Up till 1990, if you didn't, you would lose your copyright, which, you know, everyone, and we were the only country in the world, basically, that had that rule, and they finally decided it was stupid and got rid of it.
Okay. Let's go to Joe in Orange County. Joe, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. Two quick things. One, I'm putting together a children's book with my son. If I take pictures of things in the background with, like, his puppy, if it's like a name type of brand or something like that, it's going to be a problem. Do I have to do generic things in the background?
Like what? I'm sorry.
For example, a toy in the background, like a toy robot for Christmas. You know, that might be easily identifiable. Is that a problem if I have that in the background?
It could be.
Yeah, it's getting to be less and less. I mean, people owning brands are being a little less ridiculous about protecting their brands
to the point where
there was the movie where Denzel Washington was the drunk pilot,
right?
And he's drinking Budweiser through the whole movie, and Budweiser tried to get him to take the Budweiser cans out,
right?
You know, and they said, and they said, forget it, and got away with it. So I think generally you're going to be okay. I think unless you show the item that's really recognizable in a really unsavory way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. It would be, you know, just like something like a present you open up. I mean, if you used an iPad, for example, in the background, is that going to be a problem? I mean, to me, it's promoting their product.
Yeah, but they don't look at it that way always. I think what I would do is just look. I assume you use Photoshop. Just minimize it enough so it's at least questionable.
Okay.
Or if I take maybe a partial part of the picture, so it's not that discernible. The other question I had for you from a technology perspective, are there still a lot of companies out there doing patent trawling?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I mean, and they just do that for a living. Maybe you could explain to everybody what that is. But they just do it for a living, right?
Yeah, there's a number of companies that go and buy patents that have been granted and really aren't being used anymore. And these companies don't make anything. All they do with their patents is run around and try to find things that, you know, arguably are infringing on these patents. And if you have a nice big broad patent, then, you know, and they always sue in East Texas for some reason because that's where the juries, for reasons no one really knows, you know, gives out a whole lot of money. And so, yeah, I mean, it's totally just churning the legal system for money and not producing anything. But it's
a grand old tradition.
Yeah, the Supreme Court has, you know, knocked out some of the bases for that, but it's still happening.
All right, let's go to Claire in Monroe. Claire, you're up.
Oh, hi. I have a company that videotapes dog performance events. I'm an established vendor at these events, and we record them for resale to the handlers. Recently, I've been contacted by a company in New York that wants to use footage that I have to promote a product for healthcare for dogs. And so my question to them is, do I have to get releases of the people in the video who are handling dogs?
Yes, I would say.
Yeah. You don't have to get releases from the dogs.
From the people?
but from the people.
Yeah, because that goes back to our earlier call about advertising.
Would she have to get releases from the owners of the dog? Because the handler is different from the owner.
No, that would be the handler's image that was in the video, not the owner's. And mostly it's the same. But this is to be used for social media, a one-minute video that's going to be used in YouTube, Twitter, et cetera, not in the commercial.
You need to get
I would get permission.
Because what it is, you're basically running big commercials, and these people, you know, look like they're endorsing the product. And so you would want to get, you know, their releases.
Okay.
Well, the company would want to get it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks,
thank
Claire. We appreciate the call. Now, you mentioned the dog. We made a joke there. You don't need to get the dog's releases. But what if it was a show dog?
Well, yeah, I think you'd need to get the owner's release.
I don't, you know, I mean, we're talking here about privacy. And last time I checked, most dogs don't have a really finely refined
all right
sense.
So maybe leave that alone.
And this has come up with horses. And actually, I was involved in some
children?
Of that. Children, yes.
But a two-year-old probably has about the same concern about privacy as a basset hound.
Well, maybe.
There's a phrase I haven't heard before. Well done. That bonus point.
I'm gonna remember
right,
that and use
trouble.
It one day.
Now we're in trouble.
I'm using that.
Okay. Well, I guess it's too late to take another call here. So let's get your contact information one more time. Paul Rapp.
Paul@paulrapp.com.
You sure you got this now, Bill?
Westwoodmedical.com.
All right.
PMLaw@buttonwoodart.com.
All right. Thanks to everybody who called in today. I'm sorry if we didn't make it to you, but it was a fun show. And thanks to our panel. Support comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home. ValleyHomeImprovement.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, 5th Annual Interfaith Program, Letters from Ann and Martin, Thursday, March 12th, 7 p.m. at Skidmore Filene Auditorium, 518-584-8730. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their new website with more information about membership, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again to our panel, Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls and the emails. Thanks to, Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Dan Goldstein. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Drive safely. Apparently, the snow is going to come down again. We got a winter weather advisory. You've heard this song before. Stay tuned now for a news update.